I'm Kevin Bachman. On this episode of Background Check Radio, Jason Morris, my iCubed Advisors partner, is with us. He and I are going to run through a half dozen things that are very interesting to us in the screening space right now. We have some post-PBSA thoughts. We're a couple weeks out and some ideas we wanted to share on the last conference. Recent chatter around the Federal Trade Commission and our data brokers going to become CRAs, are they going to be regulated as CRAs, and what impact might that have to our space? Our master research report is finished. We have some interesting thoughts to share on that. Checker had a lot of layoffs. What M&A opportunities are in front of us, and kind of on that vein, why aren't more small CRAs looking to get out of the business? So welcome, Jason. We've got a lot to talk about today.
I'm excited about this one. I'm excited.
Yeah, what jumps out at you first? What do you want to dive in on?
I don't know, since it's so old, let's talk about the PBSA conference. Let's start there.
All right. Did you have a good show this year?
I had fun. I always have fun at the PBSA show. I got
49th show in a row?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. I mean, they've been doing it for 20 years, two a year, but they didn't have two every year. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be at least 40, including like meetings, planning meetings that we had in the beginning to get this thing started. So
Jason and I initially recorded about 2 weeks ago a post-PBSA show. We decided to scrap it because we thought it was too negative. So if you're kind of looking to see what our initial thoughts were on the show, we were probably a little more glass half empty than glass half full. But we thought, all right, let's take some time, maybe recollect our thoughts and approach it again. So now that we've, I don't want to say cooled off a bit, but maybe had time to put some things in perspective, what are some of the highlights and lowlights that you saw from the show this year?
I personally, and again, my, and this is something I'm addressing with PBSA too, what the prism that I look through going to these conferences is different than a lot of other people that they're going to accomplish in a conference like this. I'm not going to go to a bunch of, you know, sessions about operations because I don't operate a CRA. I think that one of the things that PBSA has an opportunity to improve is the higher level of education sessions that they put out, meaning things geared towards more C-level or executives, more opportunities for executives in the industry to collaborate like we used to many years ago. So I think that's a serious opportunity for improvement. The sessions were not overwhelming for me. They were okay, some better than others. I got some great stuff out of a few of them, and some of them they seemed very so basic to me. I just didn't know why they were doing them. The programming, I'm sorry, not the programming, but the exhibit hall, I spend most of my time in there. Talking to vendors and talking to CRAs and meeting with people. And I saw that room was a lot less full than it normally is. So those were the concerns that I had. I'm not going to keep berating them over the hotel choice. I know that they're under contract for a couple of years. The hotel is horrible. But beyond that, what did I get out of it? You know, I got to reconnect with people that I haven't talked to in a long time. I learned some things about what's going on with the CFPB legislation that I normally wouldn't have gotten to discuss with people had I not been there. Our happy hour, as always, went really, really well. I enjoyed seeing some of our clients there. And
yeah, people like drinking on us, don't they?
Yeah, they love it. They love it. but, you know,
the bar tab gets bigger every year.
You know, I was talking to a CRA this morning, and one of the things that he was asking me about is something I don't have any answers to, but I think that PBSA or a lot of us getting together in more of a roundtable format would accomplish this. And that is really what are business owners and executive operators in this industry, what benchmarks are we using for different things? What KPIs are we using for different things? Somebody asked me today, you know, what percentage of sales that your team or a team closes is from inbound leads versus outbound leads? And I don't know. I don't know what's successful there. But what I do know is if you got 10 background screening executives into a room willing to share information like that, that can go a really long way for business owners. So those are the kind of things that I like to, you know, talk about at the conference. How about you? What was your thoughts about
yeah, that? And this is, you know, very much stream of consciousness, right? I don't have any notes. Jason doesn't have any notes. We turn the microphone on and talk. So one thing that I heard you say, and I'll correct something I misstated earlier when I went through our agenda, the data broker CRA issue, right, is the CFPB. It's not the FTC. I have empathy all around because, again, there are certain things that are controllable, certain things that aren't. Education sessions are somewhat dictated by submissions that the conference organizers receive. Are there things that I continue to think we don't need to see a lot more of? I've always felt that, you know, there are, I've used this example in the past, like we don't go to a drug screening conference and have 20-25% of educational sessions around background checks and employment screening. So I'm always, you know, semi-amused at the number of kind of, you know, secondary or tertiary products that really get the main stage. I get it. I understand it. I just don't need to see as many drug screening, you know, sessions over the years. I feel a lot of empathy and sympathy for the exhibit hall. I think industry consolidation plus spring break week plus Easter plus no PAM had depressed turnout, I think, a little more than people might have expected. So I didn't see a ton of activity in the exhibit hall, nor did I see a ton of decision makers in the exhibit hall. Not like we would have seen 5, 10, 15 years ago. You know, there aren't $30 million CRAs that are buying products or establishing relationships because of someone that they met in the exhibit hall. I think larger companies can take care of their business outside of the room, and the people inside of the room are just smaller CRAs. I get that you have to exhibit, you have to be there, but I'm, you know, very sympathetic to whether everybody is kind of getting the bang for their buck. Probably the biggest, the biggest compliment, staff continues to be amazing. They're accessible. They are friendly. It is a rock star group, and they do a better job, I believe, each and every year. And my final thought, probably on a programming standpoint, we just went, and again, I have this in my notes, so I can't remember the exact numbers, but we went like 24 hours of being on site before there was any real background check knowledge. I think the first session was like 2 o'clock or something on Monday. And everything before it, you know, you had the general session, you had the opening, you had the Sunday night, you had the cyber, the two-part cyber, which I think was a great idea in theory. I don't think everybody loved it. But, you know, you really kind of went, and even on that Monday, there was only one group of breakout sessions. So almost all of the content was on Tuesday for a 3-day conference. I would have liked to have seen that mix a little bit different.
Yep. You know, the one thing you broke out that we didn't really go over was just the mix of people that attended. There was 380 people in the app that were registered for the conference, but you know, only 30% of them were actual attendees. So 145 people were actually CRAs or end users that were there. There was like 30 lawyers and the rest were exhibitors. So, you know, they really need to find things that are going to bring people into the conference to come to the conference. But again, I agree with what you said earlier, spring break, Easter, all that stuff that was happening, I think really kept attendance down.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you for chiming in. And I'll kind of come at this from the CRA side right now. This wasn't entirely PBSA's fault. PBSA is a wonderful organization that can provide excellent resources to help you in your organization. Jason and I know, because we just finished our 2024 industry analysis, there are 400 trackable CRAs in our space. Shame on the hundreds of you that don't regularly or haven't ever attended, because this is an organization that is lobbying, really out there in front, representing the best interests of us all. There's tremendous benefit to being a member of PBSA. And kind of shame on you if you've never hopped on a plane or paid a registration fee to come to a show and learn something. You know, this is the kind of thing where I think it doesn't entirely have to be about you. Like, show the flag every once in a while for the organization that's looking out for your best interests.
There's a benefit to it. Look, we were a better company because we were involved with the association. I mean, a lot of us were involved with it. We met end users through it. We increased the visibility of our business through it. I personally just owe a lot to it. And if you're not getting involved with it, you're really missing the boat.
Absolutely. All right. CFPB and data brokers, CRAs, a lot of buzz, certainly at PBSA, but in conversations you and I've had over the last couple of weeks. You want to bring our audience up to speed on it and what it might mean?
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't read the language or anything yet, but what I do know is this: the CFPB in their infinite wisdom are coming out with new legislation and rules surrounding how data brokers sell their data and who they sell it to and how it's sold. A lot like what the FCRA, did when it came out. And a lot like what the EEOC did with the 2012 criminal guidance, they're not really grabbing the ears of background screeners to see what the effect's going to be on this yet. So hopefully through the public comment period, there's going to be enough information at their disposal to guide their decision-making process. But at the end of the day, what it sounds like to me is the CFPB wants to make these data brokers almost as culpable for the information as background screeners are. So they... maximum possible accuracy comes into play earlier in the process with database information, which quite frankly makes it kind of useless at that point. So I'm not sure.
Are you arguing then that data before it hits the CRA is, you know, we should really think of it as like pointer data only? Like, yeah. I get the database stuff and I get the trace as a data source, but you know, let's think of the old school runners. Like, you know, I mean, shouldn't they meet the standard, or shouldn't CRAs expect that they meet that standard?
I mean, at a certain price level, but I'm talking more about
there databases. It is.
I'm talking about databases. I mean, databases should be looked at as a pointer file, as a tool in the background screening process, and that is it. And we know when we get the information as background screeners that it has to be justified. The information has to be, you know, has to be accurate. And that's our part of the process. So everybody along the way in the supply chain has a part of the process. If you put the onus on the background, on the data broker to do that, it's just you're not buying a database anymore. You're just, you might as well go buy a county search. It's going to be too expensive.
And then what do you need the CRA for?
Right.
Yeah. So I think you hit it right there, and you said, you know, kind of at what price? Because on the other side of the exact same coin, there are organizations that are positioning themselves as that maximum possible accuracy furnisher. And that's a business model. That is a different price point, like you said. And I know, you know, so on one hand, like, that could be awesome for them. And I think a little bit of the irony behind the scenes around this issue, and I don't have a specific example of someone I'm thinking of, but it's, you know, and strip out the databases, but like, which runner, which research company, which regional wholesaler is really out there with their megaphone saying, I am not complete, accurate, and up to date. Don't hold me to the standard. Right. No, it's like, it's what they present themselves as. But you and I also understand that what you present yourself as and what you have to hold yourself to in your agreements can kind of be two different things.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
All right. Our research report is finished. You want to spend a couple minutes on that?
For those that don't know, and we're still, there's still a lot of fine tuning to do on this thing. And we are almost done with our 2024 industry report, which is something that Kevin and I started back in 2021, I think. And we did a full analysis on the industry. Every single CRA that is a pure play background screening company, not a little PI that does a little bit of background screening, or a company that has a little small division, pure play background screening, where we guess that most of the revenue comes from background screening, are listed on this report with like 450 CRAs, plus most of the suppliers in the industry, how many employees they report, what the revenue is, and we'll get to that in a second. Website, you know, everything that you would want to know about a company. And then what we did is we analyzed that information. what platforms people are on, you know, what geography people are in. So we're doing some more, and that's what's taking most of the time is the deep analysis that we're actually doing on the information. And then we're using this report, private equity in different investors into the background screening space will, you know, purchase this report from us. We've already got several orders in and have been diligently working on this thing to complete it. But we're finding out some really interesting information. Kevin can share some of the really high level information. We're not, there's a lot we're not sharing because it's proprietary, yeah. But,
and, you know, Jason and I kind of, you know, well, part of the reason we talked about it is just, it's really interesting. And it's really fun to do. Right. So we like talking about it a lot. But the, like it'll to Jason's comment, like it'll never be finished because we're always going to update it. We're always going to modify it. Right. So, we try and cut ourselves a little slack on that because it is a document that will live on forever. It is a living, breathing document, but you know, it's so cool to kind of see, like Jason mentioned, right? How many clients are on this platform? How many clients are on that platform? Like the TAS conference right now is taking place in Nashville, right? So how many TAS users? What's the estimated revenue of all the clients that are on TAS compared to other platforms? What's the proprietary share of the total screening market? You know, what percent of the market runs on the third party systems? Really cool insights into, you know, you take the three, the five, the 10 biggest companies in our space, and what percent of the total market do they control? And sneak peek, it is well over half, just amongst a handful of companies in our space. And then you look at the bottom end of the market, and no judgment, people build great businesses, great lifestyles, but they just have a $3 million CRA. And they've had it for 20 years. And that's who they are. That's what they want to be. That's the life they've carved out. How many of those are there? How many under $1 million CRAs? So it's just fascinating. There are hundreds and hundreds of CRAs, each with different attributes, right? Platform, no platform, East Coast, West Coast, you know, Georgia, California, Colorado, Ohio, Texas, you know, the biggest states. It's just a ton of fun. And hopefully you guys hear our enthusiasm as we talk about this. And the comment Jason says, some people might be like, wow, I'm interested in all of that. Some people might say, I just kind of want to know the platform stuff or the proprietary stuff, you know. But anyways, find us if you want to learn more. We have a lot of fun doing it. And we really kind of embrace the role as teacher, so to speak, with a lot of this.
Yep.
All right. What do we got next? Let's talk about Checker. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really
not great news about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and I was as surprised by it as everybody else was. They laid off like a third of their workforce, like 32%. It's pretty significant between their facilities and offices in San Francisco and Colorado. You know, nobody really knows for sure what happened. Nobody knows if they had a major client loss. Nobody knows if they're just trying to get more profitable before maybe going public. I've heard all kinds of rumors or all kinds of conspiracy theories.
We have heard it all. Yeah, you're right.
One thing that a company like that is not immune to is interest rates. And the interest rates that we're seeing now are having a very serious effect on a company's bottom line. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case here at Checker. I don't know how their funding worked, if it was, you know, there's debt in there or whatever, but I do know, you know, it's simple math. And if you're ABC company and you have, you know, $200 million, $500, $100 million, leaves around number, $100 million in debt, you know, that used to cost you, you know, $5, $6 million a year, and now it's costing you 10 just to service it. So that's $5 million coming off your bottom line. Companies can't sustain that. That's a huge part of their bottom line. It goes away overnight with interest rates like this. So it's having a massive effect everywhere in business. And I think you'll continue seeing layoffs. And what somebody used in a conversation with me today is fighting tooth and nail to not have to hire people at this point, unless they absolutely have to keep the lights on.
I had a really interesting conversation this morning with someone that I have a lot of respect with. This person is a sales rock star in our space and has performed at a couple different organizations. And we were talking about layoffs, specific to our space, inside a couple different companies, many of whom we could probably guess, Checker being one of them. And I kind of laid it out two ways. I said, you know, there's layoffs because you can absolutely nail the impact. And it's like, well, do we need two controllers? The dollars are different. There's a couple more zeros here or there. And this is just an example. You might need two controllers, right? But it's like, if the job function is the same, but the dollars are different, do you need two people doing that same job? And the answer might be no. But that's a quantifiable, predictable, we understand the impact, we're going to live with the outcomes, right? Then there's the layoffs that are like, well, we'll see what happens and we'll figure it out. And I'm in no way, when I talk through this, being dismissive of the people, the impact of families, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't mean that, you know, somebody who makes a decision is cold-hearted or, you know, it's just like, it's a different kind of decision. It's like, well, I think this is what's going to happen. And I might be right, I might be wrong, and I might be wrong enough that I can live with the outcome, or I might be really wrong, but if I'm really wrong, I'll just fix that down the road. And there's kind of that, like, I'm okay if I didn't nail it, but I'm okay taking the chance. And if I got to fix it down the road, like if I lay off a third of my people and I realize that, oh man, maybe I should have only laid off a quarter of my people. Well, okay, in 5 months, I'm going to go hire some people. And I think the reason I kind of tell a story like that, and it's a theme Jason and I have talked about for really going on 2 or 3 years now, is the sophistication that has entered our space, running companies like a business. New entrants are not, you know, law enforcement, PI, police officers, like we would have seen 20 years ago. These are sophisticated organizations with private equity or public money behind it. They need a return on their investment, and they're I don't want to say cold-hearted, but they're less compassionate on a human level because their interests are different.
No, they're stewards of other people's money. I mean, other people have given them money to grow their business, and that's what they're required to do. When, you know, it's easy to run a business when you have your own money. Once you take other people's money, you know, you have to be responsible with it. And a lot of that, with a lot of that responsibility comes difficult decisions. You know, it's the same thing with, you know, if you have 100 people pulling levers for you in your company, you know, that's great. Those are your operators. But at the same time, you're also trying to find ways to be more efficient. So if you can get that 100 down to 90 and give maybe those 10 people that were pulling levers some other opportunities in your business, that's an even better solution. But at the end of the day, the business is trying to learn to be more efficient and do things with less people, especially in background screening today because of automation. That's what people are looking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Capitalism has fully hit our space.
Yeah.
That's right. Why don't we wrap up with some M&A opportunities and maybe a thought or two on kind of the attributes of a company looking to buy, the attributes of a company looking to sell, because we're having some really interesting conversations about that stuff these days.
Yeah. You know, I was talking, I've had a couple conversations today about M&A specifically because of a deal that we have on our laps right now. And, you know, a company that we're trying to help an owner sell. And, you know, we're not business brokers. We're just people that know a lot of people and we put people together. And that's pretty much how we operate with this thing. I think that we are going to continue to see smaller opportunities out there. What's really the question I had to two companies today, I had them ask themselves is, aside from writing a check to buy a company, are you ready to buy a company? And what does that mean? Well, this process is really tedious. I mean, just doing the deal alone and the bandwidth and the people that it takes to get the deal done, aside, you know, from that point when you close on and merging two companies together is incredibly difficult to do. And even the best companies are not great at it. So if you're a company that has nobody in your organization that's ever had any experience with M&A or putting two companies together, I would almost talk you out of getting into it before you got into it. And that's what I did today. There's other ways to grow your business organically. It doesn't have to be through M&A. However, there are some opportunities out there. And if it's something that's, you know, in your growth strategy and in your thesis on how to make a company bigger, M&A could be a great way to do that, as long as you have the right people and the capital.
That's a really interesting approach. You know, our listeners are probably sick of hearing me say the phrase, you know, from bachelor to grandfather in 30 years. But when we think of those hundreds of companies underneath the $10 million level in our space, and then we say, like, really, does an industry need hundreds of companies, you know, at that size? And like, whatever, it's all good. But the mindset, the attributes of that business owner, of that leadership team is really so different. And when we combine that with the idea that many of these companies were formed 20, 25, 30 years ago, I'm surprised that we're not seeing yet, and I think that'll change, right? I'm surprised we're not seeing yet a number of $3, 5, 7 million companies looking to exit. Not because they're scared, not because they're, you know, they can't compete, or you know, their data costs are too high, their prices are too high. Just because I imagine, if you look at the leadership and ownership structure of so many of these companies, like, these are not 29-year-old business owners. You know, these are 59-year-olds, 69-year-olds who have built a great life and they built a great business. And at some point, I expect in the next, you know, 12, 18, 24 months, like, just take some money off the table, go retire, go bounce the kids on your knee. Like, good job. You did an awesome job. Now go retire. I expect to see more of that. I'm surprised we haven't seen it, but my opinion on that hasn't changed. I think that's kind of the coming wave.
Yeah, and I'm starting to get calls from companies that are smaller and they want to know what to do. The problem is small. If it's a smaller, you know, sub $10 million in revenue, bankers don't want it. You know, it's too small for them, and we can definitely help those companies out. You're definitely seeing more and more of that popping up, and I think that companies and owners are going to say to themselves, man, this is a really competitive business. Man, there's a lot of compliance issues here. And man, I don't want to get sued. Maybe it's time to, you know, to walk away. And you can walk away with a nice return.
Yep. Well said. Final thoughts. What do we have coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Oh, well, you and I are living this massive project. I think we're going to be living that for a little while longer. We're going to put some more formality behind our podcasts and webinars and stuff that you and I are doing. I guess the next big thing would be looking forward to the annual conference in Boston this year.
Yeah. If I'm not doing this, I'll be on a baseball field for the next 75 days. Thoughts and prayers accordingly. But yes, certainly more speaking, writing. Our next podcast, which we haven't announced the date, will either be a product spotlight or an Ask Us Anything. The Ask Us Anythings are really, really fun. Usually a few hundred people join that webinar and they just drop questions and comments in, and we rapid fire it as, you know, rapid fire answer as fast as we can. That's probably my favorite podcast each year to do. So be on the lookout. Jason, as always, a pleasure. And thanks everyone for listening. Remember to subscribe, like, and follow iCubed Advisors, and listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day, everyone.